Did you know nearly one-third of supplement consumers in the U.S. are unsatisfied with the current immune-supporting drinks on the market? Help your consumers get the products they want with Immuse, the novel, clinically researched postbiotic that activates our body's natural defenses at the cellular level for year-round immune support. Formulate with the immune health ingredients backed by 30-plus research studies. Learn more at immusehealth.com. That's Immuse, I-M-M-U-S-E, health.com.
Hello, and thanks for tuning in to episode 76 of Taste Radio Insider. I'm Ray Lateef, the editor and producer of Taste Radio, and I'm with my BevNet and Nosh colleagues, John Craven, Mike Schneider, and Jeff Kleinman. We're recording from the Taste Radio studio at BevNet headquarters in Watertown, Mass., and in this episode, we're joined by Mark Alexander, the CEO of fast-growing skier brand Icelandic Provisions. Just a reminder, if you like what you hear on Taste Radio, please share the podcast with friends and colleagues, and of course, we'd love it if you could review us on the Apple Podcasts app or your listening platform of choice. Mark Alexander, I always like it when someone has two first names as their name, right?
I'm an avid skier, so I'm really looking forward to this interview, right?
It's not that kind of skier, Mike. Mike Schneider.
Sorry.
Your last name doesn't fit. No, I've never met anyone whose first name is Schneider.
No, you don't usually see that, but it does mean Taylor in German, so you might know a Taylor.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
As in T-A-Y-L-O-R?
Or T-A-I-L-O-R.
I don't know anybody with that spelling. No. No. John Craven. I mean, everyone calls you Craven, so your last name is essentially a first name, right?
Yeah, well, we have a lot of people named John here. It's just a matter of efficiency.
Less than we used to. We used to have about 10 or 12 Johns in the office.
Yeah, that sounds kind of weird to say that.
Yeah.
We have too many Johns here. yeah, I don't know. That was the old days of the beverage industry. It was a bunch of dudes named John that wanted to apply for all our jobs.
Now it's
much more diverse now. Thank God.
Slightly more diverse for sure.
But there's only one Ray.
And there's only one Jeff in the office as well, as far as I know. Do we have another Jeff in the office?
We used to have another Jeff.
Jeff Hyde.
Yes.
You kind of took him out, though.
Most popular name, 1972, for boys, Jeff.
Was that the year you were born?
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. Well, that makes a lot of sense.
Perfect.
Yeah. Lots of fun with our Elevator Talk live stream yesterday. We set this up to give entrepreneurs from across the food and beverage industry an opportunity to share news and new products that they would have been exhibiting at Expo West 2020. As everyone knows, the show has been postponed. We talked to 30 entrepreneurs and executives from companies like Tea Riot, Bobo's, Salty, Ayoba, Greenbelt, Craft Kombucha.
The list goes on and on. It was fun to expand the platform, though. I mean, Elevator Talk, as most people know, has been a show that we used to interact with brand new brands who want to practice their pitch to their dream investor. And so it was fun to have established brands come on and talk about line extensions and refreshes and rebranding. And even in the case of a new name. Yeah. Now it's called Ayoba.
Yeah. It was really fun. I felt really engaged and excited about what people were coming out with, how their brands were evolving. And obviously, these are difficult times that we're living in at this point. But, you know, the excitement and the energy in the food and beverage industry seems really strong.
Yeah, I mean, you could definitely see almost the pent-up energy in some of those folks. And I think we kind of felt that way here, too. You know, It's like we were all, you know, ready to go for Expo and... It was great just to like be able to connect with a lot of these people, and I feel like the net was pretty positive. So,
yeah, we had such a great response from entrepreneurs from across the food and beverage industry, so much so that we're going to do a couple more sessions, actually three more sessions as of the recording today. We're doing another one tomorrow on Thursday, March 12th. I hope you all tune in for that, or I hope you all tuned in for that, that is. And then two more next week on March 17th and 19th, all at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Please tune in on LinkedIn or on the BevNet and Nosh homepages. We just got some newest SKU from Spindrift. That's their new pineapple variety. This is something they were going to be showcasing at Expo West. And along with this news about the new SKU, news broke last week that the premium sparkling water brand raised $29.8 million in a new funding round, its single largest round to date. Congratulations to Bill Creelman and the team over at Spindrift, who are right up the street in Newton.
not a lot of information about that raise. They didn't really want to talk about it much. We're not even sure who most of the investors were. We don't know if there was a lot of re-up or if they brought in some new folks.
Yeah, read the full story on BevNet.com. I'm sure we'll be following up with more details as they come in.
Have any of you guys tried the pineapple yet?
Yes. I have not, but I'm hoarding it.
I like it.
Yes.
Have you?
I haven't. Looking forward to maybe throwing it in with a little dark rum.
There we had go. A little tasting yesterday, and I think that you're going to enjoy that.
I hope I did.
I'd be happy to have that tasting at around 3 o'clock today if you're available, Jeff.
Well, it depends on what day today is.
Wednesday, and I have dark rum and one can of Spindrift.
Well, that's very exciting.
Let's do it.
That's happening.
Well, if you're looking for something of the non-alcoholic variety, you might want to try Athletic Brewing. I don't think we have any in the office, but congrats to Bill Schufelt, who's a longtime Taste Radio listener. He's the co-founder of the fast-growing non-alcoholic beer brand, Athletic Brewing, which just announced a raise of $17.5 million. And they're moving into a former production facility owned by Ballast Point in San Diego. That means they'll have two production facilities, one on the East Coast and one on the West. Good stuff from Bill and Athletic Brewing.
Tasty product.
Tasty product. Exciting to see this category growing. I mean, I think this is one of those where the non-alcoholic beer space has come such a long way, and this product, you close your eyes, taste this against some of the lower ABV beers, you won't be able to tell the difference. It's really good stuff.
Congratulations to Bill for being someone who could really put together a brand that people believe can go national real quick. I'm wondering where the competition is.
Well, there's other competition out there. I think it's, you know, we're still in the very early stages, and it seems like, you know, these guys have a head start as far as being, you know, a standalone as opposed to a line extension non-alc beer. You know, I think they just have a head start. So I think good on them for, to your point, like not waiting for that San Diego guy to pop up.
You can read on the story about Athletic Brewing and its new raise on brewbound.com. Check it out soon. All right. On the table today, we've got I put a bunch of stuff down and it's just been torn apart. You guys are munching on the Beanfields vegan cracklin aged white cheddar. What are they? Chips? Or are they? What are they?
They're vegan cracklins. They're kind of
they're extruded snacks, right?
Wait, are these are the cracklins that are supposed to be quote unquote pork rinds or like vegan pork rinds?
Yeah. Those in the
Snacklins.
Oh, we got some Slacklins too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you say Slacklins?
I didn't say
it's
Slacklins.
Like, it's like the office tools getting in your brain there.
Exactly. Snacklins, 90 calories. Eat the whole bag. Did you guys eat the whole bag? I didn't even get to try
Not
this
yet.
Stuff yet.
We shared.
We shared a little bit, but there's some, look there's like, some left.
They look like large Fritos. I give them credit for that.
But they dissolve like a good pork rind.
I don't eat a lot of pork rinds. I will trust you.
I talked to Arnold Ventura, the CEO of Beanfields, about these.
You know Arnold Ventura?
We all do, don't we?
Yeah.
Arnold's a Renaissance guy, right? He's an artist. He's a marketer. He loves data. And we were talking about why they called these cracklins. And he talked about the properties of cracklins. And we talked about the care that they put into the name and why they don't call them vegan pork rinds, why they call them specifically called these cracklins. They have the crunch. They have the flavor. Those were all really important to him.
All right, I think it's time to get to our featured interview for this episode. That's with Mark Alexander, the CEO of Icelandic Provisions. Following a long career at the Campbell Soup Company, Mark joined Icelandic Provisions in February of 2019. A brand of traditional Icelandic skyr, Icelandic Provisions launched in 2016 and has tapped into a growing market for high-protein, low-sugar cultured dairy. The products, known for their rich flavor and velvety texture, are sold in over 6,000 locations nationwide, including Whole Foods, Wegmans, and ShopRite. In the following interview, I spoke with Mark about his transition from Campbell to Icelandic Provisions, lessons and takeaways from prior roles at Campbell that he's incorporated into his current one, and how the company assesses trendy concepts and ingredients. Hey folks, it's Ray with Taste Radio. I'm on a call with Mark Alexander, who is the CEO of Icelandic Provisions. Mark, how are you?
I'm doing great, Ray. Thanks. How are you?
I'm great. Where are you calling in from today?
I'm in New York City, right next to Grand Central Station at Icelandic Provisions Global Headquarters.
Very cool. How long has Icelandic Provisions been around, and how long have you been with the company?
And so the company was founded a little over 4 years ago, and it was founded by some American venture capitalists from Boston, Polaris Founders Capital, and they had spent a lot of time in Iceland with an investment that they had over there. And they fell in love with the country, with the lifestyle, with the food, and especially with the skier. So they decided they want to bring the product to America. So they struck up an arrangement with MS Dairies, which is the largest Icelandic dairy cooperative, and put together a management team here and launched Skier about 4 years ago. And then I came into the picture a little over a year ago. I joined the company, joined the board, and then took on the CEO role.
Now, Mark, you came to the company after nearly three decades at the Campbell Soup Company, which is pretty amazing. What are some of the roles that you had at Campbell?
I had virtually every role that they have. So I joined the company as the in Canada as the assistant brand manager on Pepperidge Farm frozen desserts, and managed my way around the world four or five times across Europe and the UK, Asia, Australia, and managed businesses in the UK, ran our Asia Pacific division, ran all of our international businesses, and then spent my last 5 or 6 years there managing the soup, sauce, and beverage business in the Americas.
Interesting. So you had nearly every role in the company. I'm assuming you weren't the CEO, though.
No, stopped short of that. But I actually spent most of my time with the company overseas. You know, I'm from Canada originally, so I started there. I actually went back there at one point as the lead marketing person. And you just spent a lot of time traveling around and living in different places and, you know, sort of came back to the corporate headquarters for my final stint. But the CEO role was never mine.
It was not your ambition to be CEO of the company?
It was my ambition to be CEO of a company, and I've now happily realized that.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, how many people work for Campbell, or how many people work for Campbell when you were there?
Something around 16,000 people around the world. So yeah, pretty big company, pretty big workforce.
Mike, I heard you're starting a beverage company.
Ray, let's say I was. Do you have any suggestions for a complete partner?
Absolutely. Ingredion. Ingredion is a leading global plant-based ingredient solutions provider to the food and beverage industry with a diverse portfolio, including sweeteners and sugar reduction technologies, plant-based proteins, starches, and hydrocolloids.
Of course. Ingredion's 360 value framework delivers value according to your brand's specific needs through consumer well-being, environmental impact, and value creation. Ingredient's market research and insights for innovation can help uncover opportunities within the beverage space. For instance, figuring out what added health benefits consumers need. They have a network of technical experts that will help you solve your pain points to get you to market faster. With Ingredient, you gain a partner who helps you deliver the total beverage experience that keeps consumers coming back.
To learn more about Ingredient, head to tasteradio.com/beverage.
Meet one-to-one with buyers from Whole Foods Market, GoPuff, and Lowe's Foods at BevNet Live on June 12th and 13th in New York City. To be considered for a retail meeting, register for the two-day event at BevNetLive.com.
The New Beverage Showdown returns to BevNet Live in New York City on June 12th and 13th. Pitch your beverage startup in front of a panel of expert judges, our live audience, and viewers tuning into the live stream. To learn more, visit BevNetLive.com.
So I'm curious, you know, how do you manage ambition in a company with that many people when I'm sure there are a number of folks looking at those top positions in the C-suite?
Yeah, you know, one of the things that that I've learned over the year, Ray, is that there's so many different motivations that people have for coming to work, you know, and absolutely there are people who have ambition and, you know, want to get to the top and so forth. But there are lots and lots of people coming to work for different reasons. People who, you know, really want to practice their craft and want to make great products and, you know, want to live in the lab and live in the kitchen and make great food. You know, there are people who want to solve problems for consumers, and they literally get their satisfaction from doing that. So I never found that I was in some environment of, you know, scraping and clawing and, you know, managing ambition. I think, you know, I always enjoyed working with a team of people who all brought different perspectives and had different ambitions for themselves, you know, within the company.
What are some of the most challenging aspects of working at a place like Campbell, and what are some of the most rewarding?
So I'll start with the rewarding because, you know, I have zero regrets about my many years there. I had a wonderful experience. And what was great about it is first of all, the global aspect. I mean, I love travel. I love experiencing different cultures. And so working in a company with the scale of Campbell's, you know, just allowed me to have such a rich set of experiences in all kinds of crazy places like Papua New Guinea, spent a lot of time in Indonesia, and all over Europe. And so a lot of rich experiences with the global nature of a company like Campbell's. One of the other things that was really gratifying was because of the scale of the company, you know, you're super relevant and you can have a lot of impact. You know, when you're in virtually every household, when your business is of a scale that it really matters to your customer, you know, you feel like you can really impact things in a significant way. So those are some of the things I really enjoyed. I think one of the challenges in a big company is there are so many gears and cogs and so forth in the company and so many people who need to get involved to get something done because of the scale that you're operating at. And that automatically puts you in a situation where you're spending a lot of time internally sorting things out and making sure the gears are meshing, which takes away from time out with consumers and customers. So it's that internal focus, which is necessary in a large enterprise that, you know, that can be challenging as well.
So I'm sure this ability to be a little bit more nimble and be able to innovate on a more consistent and fluid level was one of the reasons that you were drawn to Icelandic Provisions. But then again, I'm putting words in your mouth. What really drew you to the company?
When I left Campbell's, I was pretty clear in my own mind what I was looking for. And the first thing I was looking for was a great product and brand that I could, you know, personally invest myself in, that fit into my lifestyle of being outdoors, active, healthy, you know, trying to eat well, something that my family would get into, my wife and my kids would enjoy the product, that it'd be cool to talk to my friends about. So great product, great brand was definitely number one. Second thing was significant growth opportunity, where I could see, you know, a 5x, 10x kind of growth opportunity with, you know, product innovation, with channel expansion, with geographic expansion, you know, that there was growth that you could see that you could get after. And the third thing was great people. Business is all about people. So I was looking for investors, board, management team that were great people. So those are my ingoing criteria. And I met a lot of people, you know, was working with a number of different firms and looking at different things. And when I met John Flint and Greg Rubin from Polaris Founders Capital, I hit it off with them right away. We went over to Iceland together and met the partners over there, started eating the product. This product is awesome. The brand has so much potential. And meeting with our partners over there, thinking these are great people, and the growth opportunity just became obvious. So the more time I spent with them, the more clear it became to me that, hey, this company fulfills all the things I'm looking for. So I joined up a little over a year ago and really haven't looked backwards. It's everything, you know, that it's cracked up to be.
What was the steepest part of the learning curve in the transition from Campbell's to Icelandic Provisions?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a learning curve, Ray, no question about it. But you know, first of all, I think because I had a lot of experience working in smaller operations all around the world, and Campbell's is a fairly autonomous company, that, you know, working in a small company with some resource limitations wasn't entirely new to me. And then, you know, we'd been acquiring a number of smaller growth companies in my last 5 or 6 years at Campbell's, like Plum Organics, and spent a lot of time with that team and that business. So I had a reasonable appreciation for what I was getting myself into. But having said that, I think a couple things. First of all, is that subject matter expertise is a little bit harder to come by. So at a large company, you know, you've got an expert in the next office on just about any topic, you know, whether it's advanced analytics, food safety, food law, you know, pick your topic, and there is a PhD or someone that you can go talk to and get great insight and great information. We rely on a broad external network at a company like us, Icelandic Provisions, and you've got to hunt around sometimes to get that kind of expertise. So that's certainly been a part of the learning curve, is having to be a bit more resourceful in terms of getting input on important decisions and things. And I think the second thing is, to be honest with you, is the focus on cash. You know, we're an early stage company. We have people's own money invested in this. And I think in all my years working for Campbell's, I might have visited the Treasury Department once. And here, I mean, I look at our cash statement every week and I'm looking at the inflows and the outflows and, you know, paying really close attention to the cash. So that's been a learning curve as well.
I can see why, you know, just hearing you talk about the company, how much passion you have for the brand at this point. And, you know, I think that's one of the things that drives a lot of people when they work for entrepreneurial food and beverage companies is the passion to transform, the passion to bring a unique flavor or texture or just a new taste to a legacy category like yogurt, for example. You know, is that the reason that we're seeing so many folks who have corporate experience migrate to entrepreneurial beverage companies and food companies?
Yeah, I think that's part of it, Ray, for sure. I think that, you know, it's no secret that the growth is at the small end of town, you know, and the consumer is looking for authenticity, you know, clean ingredients, brands that resonate with them. And there are a lot of small companies doing that really well. And if you, you know, parse total food Nielsen numbers, you can see that, you know, all of the growth is happening down with the smaller companies. So definitely the growth is fun and people want to be there. But I think also that a lot of the smaller challenger companies have a real sense of purpose. They exist to fulfill things that are meaningful to employees. And I think there's also a freedom to operate in smaller companies, which is harder to come by in a bigger company. There are fewer strictures and encumbrances and the weight of big departments overseeing everything. And there's a lightness and an agility that you can just really get on and do stuff. So I think that combination of, you know, growth, purpose, and freedom are really compelling for people to come over to the smaller side of town.
Now, as you've been staffing at Icelandic Provisions, do you find that the transition for some folks or during the hiring process, if you're looking at folks who have corporate experience, do you feel like that transition is going to be harder because they're not used to that light and agile approach that entrepreneurial companies are used to?
100%, Ray. I think that adaptability to a small environment is absolutely critical. And, you know, we are assessing people. That's a really important part of what we do. And so we actually hire a lot of people who've already had some small company experience. And then we're looking for people who have that kind of personality, that kind of approach where they are going to be able to adapt. And I am no exception to that. And I think when our Polaris Founders Capital people saw my resume, they were like, are you kidding me? Like, how's this guy even going to function in a company like ours? But as I got to know them and they saw, oh, wow, okay, well, this guy's, you know, run businesses in Indonesia that are pretty bootstrappy, you know, spent time in smaller companies, you know, maybe that can work. But that was certainly front of mind for them, you know, as I came in. And certainly as we look at people and bring people on board, you know, we're looking for those personal characteristics where they're not afraid to roll their sleeves up. No one is above packing a box to send off to a customer. You know, no one needs to have an assistant or is going to frown about doing their own expense report. So we check all that stuff out. And we actually have a fun tradition that before we actually hire someone, we have them meet in a group with all of our employees. And, you know, we'll have a beer or something and chat with people and just, you know, get a sense, are they going to fit in?
Percentage-wise, I mean, how many folks are you hiring from CPG conglomerates versus from the entrepreneurial community?
It's a mixture, you know, and typically, I shouldn't say typically, but what we see a lot are people that are sort of already migrating from big to medium to small. So, you know, for instance, our most recent hire is our new chief marketing officer, which we're super excited about. His name is Dan Hickel, and he's been the VP of the Clif brand at Clif Bar. And Clif Bar is obviously a lot bigger than we are, but they're sort of a medium-sized company. And, you know, Dan started his career and spent a lot of years at Pepsi before that. So, you know, this, I think for him and for us, you know, felt like a sort of natural migration as he comes in. So a lot of our people have big company experience, but a lot of them have also worked in medium-sized or smaller companies as well.
Mike, I was just in the kitchen and I saw this really cool THC-infused beverage brand called Eighth Wonder.
Ah, chill brand. They make cannabis bevs as well as beer and spirits. The product you're talking about is a super tasty cherry limeade cannabis seltzer called Lil Bit. And did you know Eighth Wonder was acquired last year by Houston's BioCity Hemp?
Yes, I did. That deal created a world-class, vertically integrated cannabis and craft beverage company. Bio's science-based processes for extracting THC from hemp have made the company the gold standard for cannabis products across Texas and beyond.
Bio's cannabis portfolio includes Eighth Wonder as well as Howdy and Beach Break, all of which are distributed throughout Texas and Louisiana.
You can learn more about all these brands at eighthwonder.com, siphowdy.com, and sipbeachbreak.com.
On June 12th and 13th in New York City, hear from Icelandic Glacial, Lemon Perfect, GoPuff, Sachet, Diageo Ventures, and Lowe's Foods during the leading event for the beverage industry. Save on BevNet Live tickets through April 26th. Just visit BevNetLive.com.
Every day we hear about one particular diet or one particular ingredient as being the hottest, the newest, the best for consumers, for modern consumers. Do you feel like hype is fueling a lot of these emerging trends, or, you know, are consumers asking for, you know, the elements that are embedded in these ingredients or in these food trends or diets?
Yeah, I mean, I think about that, I'm going to quote our head of innovation, John Heath, and he talks about paper fires and wood fires. And we see both of them, right? And, you know, paper fire burns really bright and then it's out, you know, before you know it. And a wood fire is going to last and burn for a while. And that's how we sort of try and look at things is this thing that's going on, is that a paper fire or a wood fire? And we're trying to attach ourselves to wood fires and things that are going to endure and things that are, you know, always going to be relevant for consumers. And, you know, consumers are smart. And I and our company have ultimate respect for the consumer. And like anyone, you know, people can be fooled once and, you know, they can be convinced into buying something because of some crazy promise. But ultimately, they're going to find out that it didn't work. You know, it didn't taste the way they promised. No, I didn't lose weight when I ate this way. And they'll come back to the things that really work and really perform. And that's where we try to play. And I think the fact that, you know, we're a traditional Icelandic company with a food product that has existed for literally over 1,000 years. And, you know, is nutritionally dense, is easy to consume. I mean, those are enduring things, and that's a wood fire that we want to be part of.
So what are some of those things that you're incorporating into your innovation pipeline? You know, what are some of the relevant ingredients and formulations that you feel like will resonate with consumers today and beyond?
Yeah, so we'll look at what consumers are really interested in and then try and, you know, bring it into our product in a way that's, you know, relevant and authentic to who we are. So I'll give you an example. You know, we recently launched a range of whole milk products, and they're, you know, they're amazing taste experience. They're just unbelievably creamy. In fact, they're called Creamy, is what we call the line. And, you know, as we've been developing more flavors within that whole milk range, you know, one of the things we're looking at is the popularity of cold brew coffee. But rather than just, you know, going out and sourcing some cold brew coffee and throwing it in there, our innovation team, you know, went to Iceland and, you know, found the most interesting Icelandic cold brew coffee, which is being made by a company called Teen Cafe, which is a coffee chain in Iceland, and partnered with them for a year to develop an unbelievably awesome Icelandic cold brew coffee. And then we've put that into the Creamy skyr, and it is unbelievable. So it's a way that we've taken a taste trend and an ingredient which consumers are really looking for, but then built it into our product in a really unique and authentic way.
I should ask about sugar, because that's always top of mind for consumers these days. How do you factor this reduced, or this call to reduce sugar in your products, into your innovation strategy?
So I think consumers are clearly wired right into the sugar dilemma, which is, you know, too much of it is going to cause you potential health problems and weight problems and so forth. And there are lots of people trying to bring products to market that solve that. You know, the beauty of our skyr is that the product is just naturally lower in sugar. And that's because the Icelandic cultures that we use, the heirloom Icelandic dairy cultures, are very mild. And that means that we don't have to dose up the skyr with lots of sugar to deliver a great taste to offset the sourness of the culture. We don't have to work that hard. We don't need to bring in artificial crutches, you know, artificial sweeteners and so forth to bring a product that's lower in sugar. So that is an absolute guardrail. It's part of our brand, is we are naturally lower in sugar, and all of our products will be developed, you know, within that framework.
So Icelandic Provisions, you know, the way I think about the brand is as a premium offering within the yogurt set. And I doubt you disagree, but when you're talking about premium products, you're often talking about a premium price point as well. You know, how do you address that dynamic between premium and affordable?
Yeah, I mean, look, there's no question we're at the higher end within the yogurt set. But let's also be real. We're not a luxury car, you know. We're still, you know, generally speaking, under $2 for a cup. So we're definitely accessible to a lot of consumers. And I think the differentiator is got less to do with, you know, you've got to be super wealthy to be able to afford Icelandic Provisions. Like I say, we're generally under $2 a cup. What we see is a much stronger association with people who are looking for the attributes and values that we bring. So people who want really good food, who want nutritionally dense food, who want great taste, who want something interesting to eat, are coming into our business. And $1.79 or $1.99 for a cup of really good food is still accessible to a lot of people.
How would you protect against, say, a potential premium competitor reducing prices on a regular basis, say, you know, dropping down to an everyday low price that is 50 to 75 cents lower than yours? I mean, I guess what I'm asking is, how do you maintain that integrity of a premium brand if your competitors are reducing their price points such that you wouldn't be able to compete?
So great question, Ray. And I think the value equation has a numerator and a denominator, right? And the numerator is the food quality, the taste, the ingredients that you're using, that you bring to the consumer, and the denominator is the price. We're very focused on the numerator, not the denominator. So we're going to win consumers with our food and with our nutrition and with our taste. We're not going to, you know, get dragged down into discounting as a way to win. So we're going to differentiate on our food and on our quality. And really, to be honestly speaking, we don't have a whole lot of flexibility to do anything else because the cost of our product is pretty high. You know, we use the best ingredients. We're using Icelandic cultures. It takes almost 4 cups of milk to make 1 cup of skyr because we're, you know, ultra filtered. So, you know, it kind of is what it is. And we're very much focused on the value we bring to consumers with our food and not trying to play around with the price too much.
Oftentimes, I speak with entrepreneurs and ask them what their long-term visions are for a company. You know, as much as you are the CEO, I guess you're in some ways the chief entrepreneur of the company. You know, what's your long-term vision for Icelandic Provisions? I mean, how do you think about a sort of quote-unquote end game for the brand?
Yeah, so first of all, I'd just say, Ray, that maybe I'm the chief entrepreneur, but we have 20-odd employees, and every one of them is an entrepreneur. You know, we have unbelievably awesome people. So, you know, I'm working with a group of people that are innovating and coming up with new ideas every day, and that's really one of the real joys of coming to work. And what we're trying to do together is build a modern Icelandic Provisions company. And what I mean by that is, you know, Skier is absolutely our core product, and we think there's lots and lots of room to grow Skier. And we're innovating all the time and coming up with new varieties, new ranges like whole milk. We have lots of distribution that we can go out and get. But ultimately, over time, we think that the brand can be even bigger than that. And there's an amazing food culture in Iceland. The purity and the cleanliness and the beauty of the food and the product and the ingredients there is awesome. And so we think that we can provide a range of Icelandic provisions over time and build a large and meaningful company that's delivering, you know, great tasting, nutritionally dense foods.
Well, Mark, it's been so great speaking with you. You know, we had some Icelandic provisions, Skier, here in our office, and it flew out of our refrigerator. So I think you're doing something right if you're feeding the folks at Bevnet and Nosh. Thank you so much again for a really great conversation, and good luck going forward with everything you guys are doing at the brand.
Hey, thanks a lot, Ray. It's been great talking to you, and glad you love our product.
Indeed, we do. That brings us to the end of episode 76 of Taste Radio Insider. Thank you so much for listening, and thanks to our guest, Mark Alexander. Please subscribe to Taste Radio on the Apple Podcasts app, Spotify, Stitcher, or Google Podcasts. As always, for questions, comments, ideas for future podcasts, please send us an email to ask@tasteradio.com. On behalf of the entire Taste Radio team, thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.